Fantastic weekend for you?
Fantastic weekend. I just came back from the Hall of Fame, and it was great to see Barry Larkin get inducted, and it was a lot of fun hanging out with the guys.
So, Robbie, we'll talk a little bit more about the Hall of Fame experience, but first, plenty of news going on in Major League Baseball. We saw a couple of trades consummated yesterday, Dirk. The Miami Marlins make a trade, giving Omar Infante and Anibal Sanchez to Detroit for three prospects, including Jacob Turner. Also, Ichiro moved to the Yankees. But now we're starting to hear stuff about Hanley Ramirez. We have Bob Nightingale on the line from USA Today to discuss your latest tweet, Bob. The Oakland A's and Boston Red Sox have been rumored in on Hanley Ramirez, and now you say the Toronto Blue Jays are as well?
Yeah, the Blue Jays are jumping in. Everybody knows that the Marlins are frustrated and want to deal Ramirez, so everybody's seeing what they can get for him. They want an infielder. And, the Blue Jays, you know, what a great athlete he is. I mean, he could play anywhere on the field pretty much. And they would love to get him as well.
Bob, I got to ask, I don't see Hanley fitting in well with the Jays. I see him more, especially with Oakland coming to town and Oakland desperately in need of a shortstop. I kind of see this as an Alex Anthopoulos multi-team super trade, which he has been known to do.
Oh, he could. I mean, so many teams want him, and Alex is very aggressive. You know, I mean, like I said, I mean, Hanley can play short, he can play third, he can play left field, he can play center field. You can put him a lot of different spots. And I think just having a guy like this, a trade chip like this, it'd be kind of foolish not to jump in and ask the Marlins, what are you looking for?
Speaking of jumping in, a couple of big-name pitchers still rumored to be out there. Any news on the Ryan Dempster to Atlanta deal?
You know, Dempster didn't know anything about it yesterday. Even the Braves looked kind of bad because they hadn't even approached him, let alone the Cubs, to say, here's a deal we worked out. You're going to agree to it. So word leaked out faster than they were able to ask him about it. So he was a little upset about that. There was no reason why he won't accept that trade. He likes Atlanta. He knows the Cubs were looking to move him. So I'd be very surprised if it's not done today.
Just one more quick question before we let you go, Bob. Matt Garza hurt. He's going to miss a start, it looks like. Zach Greinke will start finally for the Milwaukee Brewers. Any other big names floating around or any other news that you can tell us about in terms of trade rumors?
I mean, Josh Johnson is out there. He pitched well last night before leaving with a little, I think it's a phenol, a blister problem. I'm not sure if he'll get moved. Hunter Pence is being shot by Philadelphia. I don't think they want to pay his salary next year. And we'll see. I think Cliff Lee stays. I think Lee is going to sign a six-year deal for between 135 and 140 with the Phillies.
All right, Bob, thanks for joining us today and continued great work with USA Today.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you.
That's Bob Nightingale of USA Today. Most recent tweet talking about possible trade rumors involving Hanley Ramirez moving to the Toronto Blue Jays. Robbie, you were obviously a big part of a deal that brought you from San Diego to Toronto. When you get into that situation as a player, what goes through your mind and how tough is it to concentrate on your job?
Well, as a player, sometimes it's a little tough when you know that you might be traded. But on the other hand, if you come into to a winning ball club, I think your expectations are more high, and you might play better baseball.
So, Robbie, tell us a little bit about what's going on with you. What are you up to these days?
Well, I'm a special advisor for the Blue Jays, and I love my job. I don't do that much, but I just came back, like I said before, from the Hall of Fame. It was a great weekend, and hanging out with all these Hall of Famers is you still learn a lot about baseball. We talk a lot about baseball, and it's always nice to be back there.
I want to talk a little bit about the Blue Jays opening up a three-game series against the Oakland Athletics here tonight, Dirk. And you look at this Oakland team and where they are now, tied for the wild card spot. A pretty interesting series in the way Oakland has played this year. A lot of comeback wins, a lot of walk-off wins, 11 to lead Major League Baseball. What do you got on Oakland?
Well, Oakland has been clutch. I mean, just a clutch team. They get into a situation whether in striking distance of coming back or, you know, big moments, big leverage moments, and they just come up big. And that has been a real difference maker for them this year. They're not an offensive powerhouse, a fantastic pitching team. They are third and fourth best in pitching ERA and homers allowed. They've been very good at keeping the game close, at least from the pitching standpoint. And then they've given their offense a chance to strike. And there is actually a metric out there, and I know you love when I get all stat-centric, but this one's really easy. You're going to like this. Clutch, just being clutch, it's an actual metric. This measures a guy's ability to produce in a high-leverage moment. And if you look at the Oakland Athletics, they have been very clutch. They have delivered in high-leverage moments where they've had a chance to be difference-makers, and it measures players against themselves. So, for example, if a guy hits 300 standard and he hits 300 in a big payoff moment, he's not really a clutch hitter. He's just a good hitter. But if a guy hits 200 and then he gets in a bases-loaded situation and drives in that winning run, that guy's clutch if his batting average jumps up. And you have a lot of guys in that lineup for Oakland whose batting averages spike when they're in a situation to drive runs in or make a difference in the game.
Speaking of clutch, Hall of Famer Roberto Alomar joining us with us on Baseball Central at noon. And Robbie, talking about some of those clutch things and how clutch seems to be contagious. You look at the Oakland Athletics and your Blue Jays runs in the World Series in 92 and 93. Guys like Ed Sprague or Kelly Gruber or Devon White, yourself, in big situations. Can that be a contagious thing for a ball club?
I think it can be contagious. To be able to win, you need those clutch hits. It's real important to hit with men in scoring position, but it's also important that to move guys over. I think it's easier to drive a guy in from third base than second base. And I think the teams that are doing that are the teams that are winning.
Robbie, did you ever find yourself in a clutch situation? And I mean, obviously you were in a lot of them because you had a great long career, but you're ever in a situation like that and you want to try and do too much, or you think you overthink it and then you just kind of implode? These are guys that are not clutch, by the way, but is there a key to clutchness?
Well, my mind is the mindset. I think this game, 90% is all mental. I always love to be in the pressure, and I was prepared mentally to be on that pressure. So I think as a player, you have to be prepared for those situations.
And those situations come about all the time. And it might be early in a ball game where, like you say, you got to move a guy over, get a bunt down, whatever the case may be. You know, guys, I just want to roll back the clock a little bit. And right off the top, we talked about trades. We talked about Ichiro as a guy that you would have played against over the course of your career. That made big, big headlines because the New York Yankees, once Brett Gardner went down, I think we felt, and even on our show here, Dirk, for the last couple of weeks, we've talked a little bit about the Yankees maybe going out and getting a left fielder. So when I look at Ichiro, who will probably play left field, first, Dirk, I want to get your thoughts on the trade.
Well, I think that Ichiro was kind of a shocker, to be honest. I mean, he's an older guy. He's a little bit in decline. And I don't think that he's going to produce the way that they want him to. I'm not sure that I would have, if I'm the Yankees and they like collecting a wax museum of living players with all the big names they can get. I know they're into that, but I'm not sure if I'm the Yankees GM, if I go out and I grab Ichiro, because he doesn't have the power that you really need out there. He's not a home run guy. He's a base to base guy, which for me, if you're going to go out and get a declining hitter, you don't want a guy that's losing his step speed wise and is only going to hit a lot of singles. I want a guy that's, okay, yeah, he slowed down, but he hits bombs. And that's what I want from a platoon person.
I tend to think a little different. Robbie, when you watch Ichiro and going back to the days when you played, he came into the league in 2001. Does he have enough left to help the Yankees?
I believe so. You know, I think, like, he's going to be a new man now going to a different team, different ball club. When you play in the last team ball club every day, sometimes a player, you going out there not playing for almost nothing. Now he's going to go to a great ball club, great bunch of guys, winning team. I think he's going to do good.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who, when you watch him take batting practice, we talked about it with Greg Zahn in Primetime Sports, he has the ability to pretty much do whatever he wants. His batting practice looks like a home run derby. He is able to square up a ball about as good as any guy I've seen in batting practice. And I think now, going into Yankee Stadium, the first thing for me about Ichiro, I think in Seattle, he was able to do whatever he wanted, own program.
Yeah, I think not in this Yankees organization, you have to do what they tell you to do.
So right away, he asked for number 51, and they say, no, Bernie Williams wore that. You're not going to get 51, you'll wear 31. You're going to play left field, even though you've been playing right field most of the time. Started his career playing a little left, and you're going to hit eighth, which you've never done in your life before. And so right away, the Yankees send a message to say, you're going to be part of the solution for moving us forward into the playoffs, and you're not going to run the program here that you ran in Seattle.
Well, that's going to be key. Can Ichiro do that? I mean, he's been a superstar. Yep. He's going to have to eat a little bit of humble pie when he gets over there, because now he's around perennial superstars. He's not just the main man all the time. So, I mean, I know that having played against him, I know he has the athleticism to do all those things. But the question is he willing to adopt and conform?
Well, I think in this age of time, he will. I think he needs to take his pride to the side and think about the team and think about winning a World Series ring. That's, as a ball player, that's what you look forward to.
1-for-4 with an RBI and a stolen base in his debut against his former club, received a 45-second standing ovation when he got to the plate and received more cheers when he stole his first base. By the way, the impetus of this trade goes back a little ways. He went to Seattle management and said, hey, you know what? We got a young team. Things aren't working out. He asked quietly for a trade. The trade was consummated yesterday with the New York Yankees.
Had his translator ask quietly.
Had his translator ask why. But I look at that deal, and I think it's a big one for the Yankees. What I think is going to happen, and Dirk, you and I talked about this. He has the ability, in my mind, especially with that short porch in Yankee Stadium, to hit 10 home runs at least. I think he's going to try and do something that maybe reinvent himself a little bit and probably try and help this team in a different way in which he tried to help Seattle.
If Ichiro starts trying to hit bombs after 10 years of being a 200-plus season, a season hits guy, if he starts swinging for the fences, I will give you $20. Mark it down. If he goes 10 bombs, write it down.
All right.
I don't need to write that down.
It's in the brain. That's locked in the
helmet. It's on the podcast. You just reference the date. But, yeah, I will be direly surprised.
Quickly, Robbie, does he have the ability to do that? And do you start thinking about that when you have a short porch?
I seen him hit in batting practice, and he hit 20 home runs. He can hit 30 home runs if he wants to. He has that kind of power. But I think now in this stage of age, I believe that he's going to go out there and do his job. He had no pressure at all. He's going to go out there and play the game. You know, you got Giro, you got Cano, you got Alex Rodriguez. They're not going to be talking only about Ichiro. They're going to be talking about the Yankees. So I think it was the right move for them, and we'll see what happens. I'm not going to be cheering for them. I'm going to cheer for my Jays.
I know that. Plenty of more Baseball Central at noon coming your way. The Hall of Fame edition with Robbie Alomar along with Dirk Hayhurst. I'm Sam Cosentino. You're listening to Baseball Central at noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, broadcast and simulcast on Sportsnet.
Now back to Baseball Central at noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Baseball Central at noon continues. Sam Cosentino alongside Dirk Hayhurst, the Hall of Fame edition, including Robbie Alomar for the entire hour, and we will take your calls a little later in the show. Before the break, we touched on some trades, some trade rumors, so on and so forth. The other trade that I want to talk about is the Detroit Tigers making a deal with the Florida Marlins. Anibal Sanchez and Omar Infante, a former Tiger, going to Detroit. Jacob Turner and two other prospects moving from Detroit to the Florida Marlins. And I look at this deal and, you know, Detroit really starting to make a surge now. What do you make of all this and where the Tigers are, Dirk?
Oh, I think you were going right where I would go. They're making a surge now. They're making a push. And the Marlins have really done themselves a disadvantage this year. They have went out and spent a ton of payroll on big-name stars. They drew them all in to this program down there, which is now kind of petering out early. They're out of contention, or they're really close to it. And they put themselves in a bad spot because they have no young upside. They're not flush with young upside talent. They got rid of a lot of that to try and give this team this powerhouse start with the rebranding. And so now they're dumping payroll. They're making trades. They're trying to acquire prospects. They're thinking about the future, whereas Detroit is thinking about right now. So the pickup of Infante and Sanchez really is going to help them strike right now. It's going to put a ton of pressure on the White Sox.
Really weird to think about what Miami's done. Mark Burley has worked out pretty well. Free agent signing, big money. Jose Reyes, not so much. Heath Bell taken out of the closer's role. And then they go out earlier this month and they get Carlos Lee and bring him in. And all of a sudden you think, these Marlins are going to make a push. And just 2.5 weeks later, They turn the tables around. They get rid of Infante, who I think is going to be a really nice piece in Detroit because he's very comfortable there. He played there from 02 or 07 to up until 2 years ago. So he's a guy who's going to be comfortable there. And I like what Anibal Sanchez can just go in there and eat some innings in that rotation. Mm-hmm. I think that was a wise move.
Quality innings, too.
Quality innings. And then the other thing we touched on right off the top of the show with Bob Nightingale from USA Today. And Robbie, interested to get your thoughts on this one. Hanley Ramirez now part of trade rumors swirling between the Boston Red Sox, where his career started, and the Oakland Athletics, who could desperately need a shortstop and a run producer, and then the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, what would you think of Hanley Ramirez?
Well, I think Hanley Ramirez is a great ball player. You know, that he has a lot of power, great hitter, great defensive ball player. I think he wasn't happy playing third base. I think he feel more comfortable playing shortstop. That's where he played all his career. And by him getting put in third base, I personally didn't think he liked that. So I think it would be a good trade for him.
Part of your role as the special advisor to the organization is to get around and see some minor league guys. Right now, Yunel Escobar has that shortstop spot locked down for the Blue Jays. But how about Adany Echevarria?
You have to see these kids play. He's a great ball player. And hopefully he comes to the big league soon.
You know, Dirk, you talked about it with Bob Nightingale that you just don't see a fit here with Hanley Ramirez. Like, where is he going to play?
Yeah, I definitely see him as a trade piece. I just knowing what Alex Anthopoulos likes to do, he likes to get everybody involved. It's like a cocktail party of trade possibilities. It really is. And we have Oakland coming into town. They have a lot of pitching. You have the Blue Jays with a lot of prospects, and they have good up-the-middle solutions, and you have the Marlins who need prospects. So I see Blue Jays trading some prospects to pick up Hanley. Hanley getting dealt to Oakland. Oakland dealing back to the Blue Jays, guys who can pitch right now and are serviceable and controllable for a few years down the road.
I'm reading your mail right now. I am reading your mail. That makes a lot of sense to me. And by the way, for all you conspiracy theorists out there, David Cooper pulled out of the lineup for Las Vegas last night in the midst of a 9-game hit streak. And when I look at Cooper, who's had some success this year at the big league level, has had some success even going back to last year, is a guy that you think would be a very movable piece for the Blue Jays. Robbie, in what you've seen from David Cooper, be it in your travels or when he is with the big club, what are your thoughts on David Cooper?
I think he's a great hitter. I saw him play in the minor leagues. I saw him play in the big league, and I liked him a lot. But I think right now we are set with Edwin Encarnacion, and we have Adam Lynn. So I think it will be a good trade for him, too, so he can get his career, you know, on track. Sometimes you cannot lead those guys in the minor leagues for 2 or 3 years. They earn to be in the big leagues, and I think it will be a good trade for him so he can continue his career in a positive way.
Yeah, I really think he's a movable piece. Well, Robbie, on the weekend you had the opportunity to go back to Cooperstown as a member of the Hall of Fame. Just a little more than a year ago, you went in there as a guy who was about to be a member. Has this thing all sunk in for you yet?
You know, every year, this is my second year that I go there, and I feel like a little kid running around because this guy, all the players that I see there, I used to watch them play. I used to analyze all of them. You know, just today when I got a chance to shake hands with the greatest ball player that ever played this game, Willie Mays, and I never had the opportunity to do that. So that to me was special. You know, and just talk to them about baseball, about their families and what they're doing now. And that's a special, and I will always remember that.
So now that you're a member of the Hall of Fame, it's got to be kind of strange for you because at one time, I mean, this was a goal, a really vaunted thing to become. It was almost transcending baseball to become, you know, a member of the greats. And now that you're part of it, it's almost like you are part of a sacred trust of individuals who has, in some ways, a lot of say about what should be allowed in to the ranks with you. So I have to know, now that you're trusted with the title of being a member of the Hall of Fame, how do you feel about this current generation of steroid users and them coming into the ballots to get into the Hall of Fame?
Well, it's going to be I'm glad. Let me put it this way. I'm glad I'm not a writer. They're the ones who are supposed to be voting. This is a real delicate situation. What's going to happen? And we just have to wait and see. And, you know, I don't like to comment a lot about that. I can only talk about myself. Like I said, I did it clean. I played the game the right way. And, you know, a lot of these guys, I never saw them use steroids, so I cannot condone them. So hopefully we'll see what's going to happen.
Reggie Jackson came out a couple of weeks ago, and he made some comments about A-Rod, who's a good friend of his, and said, in some of the Hall of Famers that I've talked to, I'm paraphrasing Reggie now, that if and when some of these guys that have been suspected to have used, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, that he felt that not only he, but some of the other players wouldn't show up to the Hall of Fame. And what makes that Cooperstown induction so special is the fact that guys like yourself go back. I think there was 44 or 45 Hall of Famers living that went back for this year's induction ceremonies. Mm-hmm. Would it bother you? And I know you like to talk about about yourself. Would you go or stay away in that situation?
Well, it's a tough situation for me because I'm in the middle of both sides. You know, some of these guys, they're on the ballot. Some of them are my friends. And now I'm in another part of the I'm with the elite ball players. So now what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, you either respect the veteran, you respect the guys who are coming in. So I'm in a tough situation. That's something that I need to think about, talk to both sides.
Yeah.
And see what I will do. But I don't want to disrespect the guys that they have played the game the right way. And it's a real tough, delicate situation.
No, it does. It robs you of kind of, in some ways, I mean, your ability to enjoy it with your friends, because you know there's this big issue out there that is being chewed up by the populace about how Major League Baseball should basically regulate this and how people should get into the game. But at the same time, here you're a player, you have personal relationships with these guys. I mean, you've been, you know, right behind each other, supporting each other, and now you're asked to render judgment. And that's got to be difficult. I mean, I don't envy that at all for you. That's got to be hard on you.
Yeah, it's real difficult. You know, I got to know Reggie Jackson, the comments that he made, he should have not made. But I know he feels sorry for it. I believe he's going. I think he apologized.
He did apologize.
Yeah. Sometimes you talk to somebody that you don't know, and you think he's your friend, and you made the wrong comment, and he write it off. So, you know, it was a big mistake. You know, everybody that is in the Hall of Fame deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, and that's my mind. That's my thinking, and for next year, you know, people start talking about next year. Even in the Hall of Fame group, people were talking about it. So we'll see what's going to happen.
I look at, you know, when you get inducted, obviously there's so much stuff to think about. There's family and friends, and you did a documentary through Project 10 and Kevin Foley, and had cameras following you all over the place. When you went back this time around, how much different was it, and how much did you enjoy the experience? I mean, you talked about meeting Willie Mays. How much different was the experience for you as a member as opposed to an inductee?
Well, it was more calm because I didn't have to do a speech. But it was more calm, was more relaxing. I got the chance to be there with my fiance and my stepdaughter, and we enjoy all those 3 days. But you know, it was fun to be there with Barry Larkin, who I like a lot when I play against him, and it was fun. It's always fun to go back there.
So you're at the induction. You're walking around. You're trying to get comfortable with all these incredible names that you've idolized for years. Okay, serious question: how many of these people came up to you and asked you to say, "Catch the taste"?
Not once.
Go ahead.
Only you.
I get that a lot, actually. Yeah.
Going back.
I know, I do. Catch the taste. Yeah.
Isn't that funny how that's something that stuck with you your whole career in Toronto?
It is funny, you know. Everybody, I go on the street and people always recognize me with catch the taste. But, you know, the beauty, I want to tell the fans, because the beauty of going to the Hall of Fame was that I had the chance to wear the Blue Jay hat. That to me was special, and it will always, I always will be a Jay, and nobody can take that away from me.
When that came about, was there any doubt in your mind?
No doubt in my mind. It was a discussion between Cleveland and the Jays, but you know, I had big year with the Indians, but my winning year were here with the Jays, so they decide the Jays.
How much does the Hall of Fame have input on that?
They do 100%.
Really?
Yes.
And so they would consult with you to say, hey, what would you like to do? And then they ultimately make the decision.
Yeah, well, they gave you the teams. But they made the choice. I think they told me the last day, I say, I think you should go. We're going to induct you with the Blue Jays hat. And I was real happy. To me, that's real special. They gave me the opportunity to play here in Canada, in Toronto, and the country received me real well since day one. And what better honor to be shared that moment with all of them.
Yeah, it's interesting how that worked out. You go back to, I think, Ricky Henderson and Andre Dawson, and there was some confusion as to what they would go in under. But, Robbie, the lone Blue Jay, I guess other than Pat Gillick, but to go in with the Blue Jay hat on. Plenty more coming up on Baseball Central at noon. We'll take your calls. Ask a Hall of Famer a question. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your cell phone. When we come back from the break, Dirk Hayhurst, Sam Cosentino, and Hall of Famer Robbie Alomar as Baseball Central at Noon continues.
Now back to Baseball Central at Noon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the show, Baseball Central at Noon. Sam Cosentino alongside Dirk Hayhurst and Hall of Famer Roberto Alomar, who's joined us for the entire hour. The Blue Jays set to open a three-game series against the Oakland Athletics after an off day yesterday, a three-game sweep of the Boston Red Sox. Trade rumors abound, with Hanley Ramirez being the one name mentioned. David Cooper pulled out of the lineup last night for Las Vegas. Interesting stuff on Sportsnet.ca. Shai Davidi writes about Deck McGuire and Chad Jenkins, a couple of first-round picks that are just kind of treading water right now in AA. And a good piece by Mike Cormack, who writes about the Oakland Athletics and the Billy Bean off-season moves. So if you're looking to get set for that before the broadcast kicks off at 6:30 tonight with Blue Jays Central, by all means, check out Sportsnet.ca, Shai Davidi and Mike Cormack. We'll open up the phone lines as well. You can ask a Hall of Famer a question. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your cell phone if you'd like to ask Roberto Alomar a question. Robbie, fascinating conversation we had, Dirk, during the off-air time and some of the little things that go on. And one thing you're a big proponent of, Robbie, is speed.
Yeah, I love speed. I think speed make the ball club better. Especially when the Blue Jays, when we have Lowry and Rasmus and Davis on the lineup together, I totally a different ball club. It's a different ball club. The pitcher will make more mistakes. Bautista and Encarnacion will get more fastballs, and it's a totally different game.
I gotta tell you, I didn't even think of that. I did not even think it. We were talking about how you like to talk to pitchers, and one of the pitchers you talked to said he liked to throw up and in when he was 0-2 on a guy. He never gave him anything to hit. He always worked up and in because that set up whatever else he wanted to throw after that. And that I knew because I learned to do that later on, throw at somebody's chin, move him around. But what I did not know is that the speed, when guys are getting on bases and they've got a lot of speed, it forces the pitcher to think more about fastballs. Maybe this is just something I missed, but you were so right about that because
you go back now in your memory and you think that?
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I didn't throw as many breaking balls because it gives the runner a better chance of advancing on me because the catcher has to dig it, or it's a slower pitch, mm-hmm. or it just gives him that extra step. That's a great observation. No wonder you're the special consultant. No,
and the mental side and the pitching mind, you know that guy gonna steal. So you try to sometimes try to be quick to the plate, and that's when you hang a pitch. You're trying to throw a breaking ball. Your mechanics change, your mindset change, and that's when you take advantage of it as an opposite team.
We're going to take our first caller now. John from Trenton, do you have a question for Hall of Famer Robbie Alomar?
Yeah, first of all, I'd just like to say to Robbie, I'm a huge fan, and I'd like to thank him for how hard he played for us when he was here in Toronto. My question is what does he think about the turnaround that Colby and Edwin have had this year?
Well, first of all, thank you. And I loved it. You know, I think they're both great ball players. They have the ability to become great, good ball players. We know that Ross Mouse is a 5-2 player. I believe that now he's started feeling more comfortable with the city and you know, the American League, and I think it's going to be a big impact ball player for years to come. And Encarnacion, I think he went back to Dominican, working his hitting, and he's doing a great job.
Yeah, and I really think the health is a big factor. That wrist for Encarnacion, finally healthy. You saw it through the second half of last year. He's been dynamite, arguably the Blue Jays' best, most consistent hitter this year. John and Thorold, you're on the line with Sam Cosentino, Dirk Hayhurst, and Hall of Famer Robbie Alomar.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Robbie, I just want to say the same thing. It's an absolute honor to be able to talk to my favorite Blue Jay going back. I remember watching you swipe in an intentional pitch, swipe third base on an intentional pitch. And that's what kind of caught you in my eye. My question to you is, if you could replay any game in a Blue Jays uniform, what would it be?
Replay? It had to be the Oakland A's. When I hit the home run, I think that game was special for myself, and not only for me, for the Blue Jays.
The 92 ALCS,
yes,
the home run, which the famous pose has been made, the arms up pose.
Yeah, I think from that point on, we were a different ball club. You know, we were down the series 2-1, and after that, we won that game, and we came all the way and won it all the way, and we went all the way to the World Series.
And it showed that Eckersley was all of a sudden not invincible like he had been previously, a great year with the Oakland Athletics. Admark from Mississauga, you're on the line with Robbie Alomar. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Hi, guys. It's just Robbie, first I'd like to say it's a complete honor to be able to ask you a question. You're probably one of the best Blue Jays to ever play for us, so it's a great honor to talk to you.
Thank you.
My question is, if you were to compare the 92-93 teams to our team, what do we need to have? What are we missing that the 92-93 teams had that we don't have right now?
Well, it's tough to compare. I think this team has what it takes to win. But we have to realize that we've been punished by injuries. It's a lot of injury, especially with the pitching staff. And we struggled a little bit in the beginning with the bullpen, but now the bullpen's doing a great job. I think what we need to do is be more consistency. Consistency is what we haven't had all year. But the team is great. I love everybody that, you know, they go out there and play hard every day. To compare them, I think we had a little bit of advantage in at that time in 1993. We have guys who can hit for a little bit better average, but I believe that now we have more power, and they're doing a great job.
Okay, I've got a question for our resident Hall of Famer, and it is about Brett Laurie. I love the way he plays the game. Pretty confident you probably love the way he plays the game. But if he's going to be prone to dive into 8-foot concrete pits, do you sit down with him as a Hall of Famer and say, "Whoa, now, think of the situation, slow down," or do you say, "You know what? That's who he is. I don't want to change a thing."
That's who he is. You know, I got a chance to talk to Blair Laurie, and I love his mindset. Laurie knows the game. He knows what it takes to win, and he's going to go out there and play hard every day. You know, it is special when you go to the ballpark and watch. For example, I got the chance to watch, to me, who's the best player in the game today, on Batista. I love watching him play. Now Laurie, you know, Encarnacion is playing great. So Rosmar is playing great. So it's a treat to watch those guys who go out there and play hard. And they only have one set of mind. That's winning. Mm-hmm. You cannot take that away from a guy who had done that all his life. So in the other way, it's positive that he plays hard all the time. Sometimes you need to calm them down, but continue to do your work.
You were most impressed, Dirk, with Robbie's ability to pick apart a player's mentality and how important that is.
I was. We were talking about this just off air, and one of the things I thought was so great, and you know, you expect this from a guy with your pedigree, but just, you know, you see a lot of guys go on to do great things in the game, and then when they come back to it, they only seem to smile upon players who are like them. But you said something earlier, you don't coach the player to be what you think they should be, you coach the player to be what they are. You said, butchering that.
Yes, what I say is, like, I cannot teach, for example, our second baseman to play like me. I have to give the advice with his own abilities and trying to maybe add to his abilities and not tell him, you have to do that. If you don't do it the way I say, then you're not going to play. That's not the way you teach.
Such a hard thing for a coach to do that, because a coach knows what he knows from his experience, and that's the way he teaches. And so you get someone like yourself who can step out of who you are and what you were and have them apply skill set to their own ability level. Paula from Tilsonburg, you're on the line. You have a question for Hall of Famer Robbie Alomar?
Yeah, hey, what's up, Robbie?
How you doing?
Pretty good. Actually, Dirk just took my question about Brett Lowry.
Oh, sorry.
But I just want to say, would you give Brett any advice as a young player? Because he is a firecracker. and is there any other player that reminds you of Brett that you played with?
I don't know. I don't know if he played with that kind of fire. I think Brett Lowry is in his own game. But, you know, it's special to see him play here, especially him being Canadian. And whenever you get the chance to sit with him, he's a special kid. And I'm glad that we have him. And everybody has to realize that he's only 22. I believe he's 22 years old. So he's going to learn about the game. He's going to learn how to calm down maybe later on. And but at this stage, he's doing what he needs to do.
Reminds me a lot of Dan Gladden when he played with Minnesota. Kind of always dirty and running around. Reminds me a little bit of Lenny Dykstra before all that stuff happened, the way he kind of played the game. Let's go to our next caller, Joey in North Bay.
Hey, I got a question for Robbie. Robbie, who is your favorite current second baseman in the league and why? And secondly, if you guys can just give me a quick update on Dustin McGowan. Is this guy ever going to play in the majors?
Well, second baseman, I love – there's a lot of great second basemen in the game of baseball. They have – I love – in number one, I had to put Robinson Cano. Number two, I had to put Dustin Pedroia. Number three, I had to Brandon Phillips from the Cincinnati Reds. I believe those three guys are the top three second basemen on the game.
And as far as Dustin McGowan goes, we'll do our best at the ballpark tonight to try and find out what the latest on him is. But from what I understand, still shut down after a couple of different setbacks, but we'll do our best. So listening to Baseball Central at noon tomorrow, we'll try and get you updated there. Quick one, Tony from Mississauga.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say the greatest Jay ever, probably the greatest second baseman that ever played. Unbelievable. I loved watching you.
Thank you.
And the question that I have is, I just still can't understand, when you were playing with the Orioles, that catch that was the interference that was taken away, that was caught, called a home run, but would have been caught. I think that changed the whole Baltimore Orioles franchise and the Yankee franchise, and I wanted to get Robbie's comment on that.
Yeah, it was, I think it was a mistake call from the umpire. I believe he said he didn't see it. I think, I don't know how many fans were there. There were like 50,000 fans. They all saw it, but the only guy that didn't see it, it was Richie Garcia.
Richie Garcia was the umpire,
and that play was a killer for us and as a Oriole fans and as an Oriole player.
Tony Tarasco, I believe, was the right fielder, and Jeffrey Meyer, who was the fan, was the guy who caught the ball in Yankee Stadium at that time, became famous for that there, and obviously, as you say, put a hurt on the Baltimore Orioles. And as an organization, Tony from Mississauga saying pretty much the same thing. That's been a downfall. It's been tough for Baltimore ever since that time. We're running short on time. Dirk, great job today. Any thoughts, quick thoughts on the upcoming series with Oakland?
Yeah, I think that the big decider for this particular series is the fact that the Blue Jays pitching staff is homer prone. They're the third worst pitching staff in the league, and that's behind the Minnesota Twins, which have been a Triple-A team for most of the year, and the Colorado Rockies, who have used Jamie Moyer as a frontman starter, and Guthrie has been going out there every fifth day. So we are the Jays are homer-prone. They're going to have to worry about keeping the ball down and in the park, especially for such a clutch team. They put a lot of guys on base. They're walking too many. So if they continue getting in situations that plays into the strength of the Oakland A's, which is to seemingly come up clutch every time they have an opportunity to, they're going to feel the hurt. But they take as good as they give. So this is where I see the weakness. The Blue Jays really rely on the homers. They hit a lot of them. But Oakland's pitching staff is fantastic, and they give up the least amount of homers.
So it'll be two teams butting heads. How important is this series, Robbie, for the Blue Jays?
Well, I think it's real important. After three wins in a row in Boston, I think the Blue Jays have to continue to get a long winning streak. And, just to keep on going, to believe in themselves, to go out there every day, take it day by day, and we'll see what's happening.